Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. With that, let's jump into the episode. Before we jump in, we want to thank the Cosmos community for their sponsorship in making this episode possible. There are several projects building inter-blockchain communication protocols, but there's one that's currently built. Cosmos.network is on a mission to link every blockchain. Well-known projects like Terra, Band, Kava, and Secret use Cosmos and the Cosmos Hub to connect to every other chain in their network. The Cosmos Hub is completed and launched, and you could visit Cosmos.network today to check it out. The Cosmos Hub brings us that much closer to Web 3.0, and we thank the Cosmos community for sponsoring the Delphi podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm pretty amped to have Tasha on again from Alpha Finance. Full disclosure, we invested in Alpha. We're extremely happy with our investment and helping them build a little bit on the side. And I help run Delphi Ventures with a couple of my partners. Tasha, how's it going?
It's been great, and thanks for having me, Tom.
Tasha, every time I talk to you, it's not even that long of gaps, and I feel like we have totally new things to discuss.
Yeah, it's the crazy DeFi world, and we're innovating, in all the areas that we can, right? So right now we have tokenomics that's coming up, and we've thought a lot into, how we can innovate on that as well, and how do we, set a new standard for the new industry.
Yeah, no, I'm really amped for it, and for those who missed our first kind of podcast with you, they can go back and kind of check about Alpha, but I hate to ask you to give the 30-second overview again, but just for new people in the space, it would be good to hear.
Yeah, so Alpha Finance is a DeFi lab. So we are incubating a number of DeFi products, and each product will be, a product that closes market gap. So that means that, let's say we spot a huge market gap, and we find a way to innovate on that, and pretty much that's the new product that we build, right? So that's the low level on what each product is going to be, and then on the high level, it's more of how do we create an ecosystem out of all the products that we have to make sure that it generates additional value for the users when using the whole ecosystem than as opposed to using one product. So, that's a pretty high level. What that means for this model that we're building is that there are several things, right? One is that we always have to keep up with the market, see what else are missing, what are the market gaps that we can quickly capture and pretty much move DeFi going forward. Second is that even though the market gaps that we spot are maybe something that other projects have been working on as well, we always try to find an innovative way to solve it. So I think that is the key thing. And what I want to give an example is that for Alpha X, for example, it's on-chain perpetual swap trading product, and we're closing that gap. There are many other projects that are solving that as well. And I think the cool thing about DeFi is that there are so many green fields, and there's so many ways to look at the problem. So the way that we're looking at it is different from how the others are looking at it. And then we're going to see pretty much how we're going to work together with the other projects and innovate the whole industry going forward.
That's awesome. And I mean, a huge focus for us is just, we look for projects where they create a lot of value, right? You guys have clearly found niches in DeFi to capitalize on and to offer products in, like leverage yield farming. Alpha X is going to be, composable on-chain perpetuals with the funding rate, kind of baked in, which is super interesting. And I guess the second part of that, though, is finding projects whose token actually can accrue that value and is unforkable, and those tokens actually play like a critical role within the actual project. I mean, Thorchain is one that I always point to, which is, just an obvious example of a token that's, critical to how the project actually operates. You guys are also kind of in that same boat where you design a token that not only accrues value, but you know, I think it's maybe the first time, you know, we're really seeing brand new features added for different staking tiers. I mean, people are used to getting, you know, fee rebates on exchanges, but you're offering real features to stakers within your products. Can you kind of go through, you know, the thought process around your token econ? And if you can dive a little bit into each tier too, that would probably be super helpful.
Yeah, sure. So the basic level is that alpha token holders can stake and then accrue the fees from all the alpha products. So right now we have three products, alpha, Homura, V1 on Ethereum, V1 on BSC, and then V2 on Ethereum. And then, you know, all of these are in alpha Homura family, right? But then in the future, we're coming up and pretty much launching more family. So alpha X is an example of the second family. And, you know, that's the base level. And then we think of a next step in terms of what else can we do to make it more fun and make it more gamified and pretty much unite the community more while still creating real value to alpha stakers. So we think what this means for alpha stakers to stake is that they are securing the whole protocol because, you know, the funds here are using to backstop, you know, all the alpha ecosystem. So this is similar to Aave model in terms of the funds being used to backstop. So once we think of this, you know, as a next step, we think, okay, how do we make sure that users who want to secure the ecosystem get something more? So then we take a step back and see that like the fact that they are securing the whole ecosystem means that they actually can have the option to take more risks on the product and making sure that these risks that they want to take are actually something that the protocol is acceptable. So not, you know, exceeding the risk level that we are okay with, but it's more of lowering the risk level that the other non-stakers can take. So then once we, you know, think of that, then we see, okay, how do we apply that concept to the products that we already have? Then that means that the people who stake, you know, who's the funds are in the staking contract using to backstop, actually have the option to take higher leverage on Alpha Homura V2. They can or cannot, you know, open the higher leverage depending on how much they want to take, but, you know, they have that option to go even higher, as high as 40% more than what is available now. So I think that's the you know, underlying thought process, and we will apply the same thought process for other products that we're building too. And in terms of the tiers, we have five tiers. So once we have this concept of, you know, alpha tier come into play, we wanted to gamify this whole concept and make it more, you know, community engagement. So then, you know, that's how we come up with all the five characters, with Alpha Woof Woof being the youngest one to Alpha Pack Leader, who stakes more than 1 million Alpha. And then each tier will also have different features that they can unlock depending on the same framework that I shared with you.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I love that the token, one, accrues value, but two, doubles as feature unlocks. And one of the things that I'd kind of like to discuss with you is some projects get pretty complicated as they tack on new offerings and new use cases, and that kind of complicates their token econ, or, you know, their token econ kind of restricts them from going and offering new products. And I don't have a great example offhand, but the thing that's pretty cool about what you guys are doing is that you could tack on any number of products or features and basically just accrue value, you know, forever on those new products and just add specific feature unlocks for stakers to those products. So kind of basically your token econ suits really well to the kind of the DeFi lab you're building. Can you kind of share, you know, potentially what other products you might be thinking about and, you know, potentially how your token econ can be suited for those products, potentially on, you know, additional features or enhancements for stakers?
Yeah. So the second family that we are, you know, we've been working on is Alpha X. And Alpha X is, you know, a leveraged trading perpetual swap on chain. And there are several things with, I would say, Alpha X that are unique to other similar products in the same space, right? The first thing is that we are targeting DeFi users who may not have, you know, traded perpetual swap before, but they want to. There can be many, many reasons for that. One being that typically it's it's complicated, you know, to go through funding, rate payment, rebalancing, and a lot of complicated concepts that are involved in perpetual swap, right? And second is that DeFi users really love interoperability, and we also love interoperability. And what that means is AlphaX will not be, you know, a standalone product. It will interconnect with the other products through the tokenized positions. So these leveraged, you know, positions are tokenized in ERC20, and you will be able to use the other DeFi products through these tokenized positions too. And then finally, the last thing that is really, really crucial is that the way that we are thinking is, in order for us to make it most, you know, user-friendly as possible, we are also baking in the funding rate into the quoted price. So that means that when users come in to trade on AlphaX, the price that they open the positions at and close the positions at already bake in the funding rate payment. So they don't have to, you know, come back every 6 or 8 hours to make sure, you know, the funding rate payments are in process. And what that means is that they can just hold that token and do more things. Because if not, then the tokens will not be able to, you know, leave AlphaX, right? So I think that also unlocks a number of things that additional alpha stakers can do, and in terms of the features that they can unlock. The really basic one, which I think applying the same concept that we did for Alpha Homer V2, is enabling high leverage. So I would say that is the minimum that alpha stakers would be able to unlock. Depending on the five tiers, if you're in one of the lower tier, then unlock a bit more high leverage. If you're in one of the higher tiers, then you can unlock even more high leverage. And then, you know, that's the minimum, right? And then what can come even further is the usage of these tokenized positions. So, you know, we can work with more partners to see, hey, like, what would the higher tier of alpha stakers can do on the other DeFi projects using these tokenized positions.
That's awesome, Tasha. I have a couple of questions there. So, I mean, when you guys roll out the features for staking, right? Like, some of them could be really specific, right? Like, you know, you could have lower fees or greater leverage, things like that. You guys have done a really good job on your user interface. Like, everything looks amazing on Alpha Mora V2. I guess my question is, though, how do you design the user interface so that users actually, you know, are aware of either the money they're going to save or the money they have saved? And I guess all the feature unlocks, because if I go up like a leverage tier or I save like, you know, 10% of fees, I'm not sure I'm really going to know on most projects. I guess, how are you guys going about that differently so people are really aware?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So on the tokenomics UI, right, we have two parts. One is staking, where you can stake your alpha tokens and unstake. And then the other is alpha tiers. So all of these two are under the same UI. So you can think of it as different tabs. So for the alpha tier, this will, you know, show what each tier can do. And then depending on what tier you're at, it will also show something similar to what Tom, you were saying in terms of how much you have unlocked, how much you've saved for each product.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, it's cool, because that drives, you know, basically all the value of holding alpha, well, at least in part. And I guess just switching over, so just accruing the fees by staking alpha, do you guys have to make a decision on like where someone is able to stake alpha now that you guys have gone cross-chain? Like, if I stake alpha on Ethereum, am I also going to earn fees from, you know, alpha's products on Binance Smart Chain? And I guess as you guys expand beyond that?
Yeah, so right now, you know, the staking contract will be deployed on Ethereum only, and it will accrue the fees from everywhere, so including the fees from Binance Smart Chain too.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's a good way to go about it. And would it be easy for those, like, do you think it's alienating anyone from like other chains? Like, if I'm a, you know, Binance Smart Chain bull for whatever reason, right? Like, would I, you know, would I be able to easily come over and stake alpha, or would I have to go through the whole, you know, conversion cross-chain process?
Yeah, you would have to go through the cross-chain process. There are, right now there's one way, but then another way is, should be live soon, by Binance. So the first way is pretty much through Binance.com, right? The second way is the bridge that it's helping, I mean, the Binance team is helping to add alpha. Right now there are, you know, a few tokens that can go through that cross-chain bridge already, but currently not yet is available for alpha.
Awesome. Cool. Cool. And I guess there's a couple of questions on each of your products, just as an update. When you guys are thinking through Alpha Homura V2, like you guys offer leveraged yield farming, Uniswap launched V3, which, you know, just a refresher, it allows people to take basically concentrated liquidity positions. So, you know, people could think about it as a band that you provide liquidity to. That's much more specific than just providing liquidity to the overall pool. I guess, you know, Nipun, your co-founder, also had a great thread on this. I guess, how are you kind of thinking about how Alpha Homura will work with Uniswap V3?
Yeah, you know, adding leverage on top of Uniswap V3 still is, you know, a strategy. I think it is completely different thing in terms of Uniswap V3 and Alpha Homura. And if you look into, you know, Uniswap white paper, you would see there are three charts. I'm not sure if you recall, but let me just explain the three charts quickly, right? So the first chart explaining the old Uniswap V2 model, saying that, you know, the price is fixed. So if you imagine the price as the height, right, and then the volume is the axis, the x assets, then you can imagine that there is a rectangle that are pretty short but pretty long. So that pretty much explains the Uniswap V2 old model, and pretty much saying that the price is fixed, but pretty much you can go through a pretty high slippage, and it may not be ideal for a larger trades, right? And then for Uniswap V3, the width is shortened because you're actually specifying the price range. So what that means is that when the width is shortened, you can actually go, you know, a bit higher in terms of the concentration of your liquidity, and hence you are getting less slippage. And pretty much going through like a better trade in general if you know exactly where the price would move in a certain range, right? The tricky part with this though is that not a lot of people would know how to evaluate, you know, the price range for a particular asset unless, you know, a stable coin, right? So I would say, I think in the beginning, it would be more of the advanced DeFi users who move to Uniswap V3. And then eventually when there are more tools, let's say we're also perhaps going to build even more tools to make it more user-friendly to use Uniswap and making sure that, you know, general DeFi users can use Uniswap V3 as well. And then once that those tools are being built, perhaps by us, perhaps by Yearn or other projects, then, you know, that's when more of the general DeFi users would move to Uniswap V3. And I think that's how we're thinking of, you know, how we will plug into the whole ecosystem here to make sure that the general DeFi users have an easier pathway to access and use this product. So that's on high level. In terms of the Alpha Homura product in particular, what that means is that for Alpha Homura product, you are not, you know, you're not speculating on what price range you're betting on, right? But it's more of you are getting additional liquidity from taking leverage automatically without having to specify that range. So I think it's quite different on the user level in a sense of understanding the concept, but also different on the mechanics inside as well. So this is, I would say, it may not be the best explanation, as I'm not sure, you know, who knows how much about Uniswap already, but Nipun is actually going to share a blog, you know, soon to explain more about this. And a lot of people have been asking, you know, how would Alpha Homura V2 or Alpha Homura in general fit into Uniswap? And I think that would be a good explainer document.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited for his blog post, and I really appreciate your explanation. And his tweet storm was great too. I guess one other question on that. I mean, is there any risk for Alpha to be, I guess it's like a double-edged sword, right? Like you guys could move first, you could provide these products like faster than anybody else. Is there a risk though that you're kind of, you know, stuck on other protocols' decisions, right? Like, you know, Uniswap making a big change, like, does that impact what you guys have launched, or is it just a matter of, you know, continuing to innovate and support new projects kind of that they throw out there?
Good question. I think there are several things that we do to make, you know, as laser focused while still agile and flexible when needed. There are several things that we have been working on even when we have only launched Alpha Homura product, right? The second product, the third product are actually completed and waiting to be launched more so, and going through one more audit. So they both have gone through one round of audit already and we'll go through one more round. So that means that we have a basket of Alpha products that we want to launch and we'll create that whole ecosystem of interoperable Alpha ecosystem. So once we have those, you know, backlogs of products that we want to launch in our hand already, that means that we can keep an eye out and then see, you know, what are the big moves in the industry. And Uniswap V3 is a big move, right? And I think that it may not have an impact, you know, yet, but I think it will be. And pretty much we want to move early in terms of working with them, seeing how we can build and giving access to the general DeFi users through our products too. So I think it's more of, you know, having the right balance of while creating your own system, you are also innovating in the whole DeFi ecosystem too. Because if not, then you're just gonna innovate in your own, you know, own area where you're pretty much out of sync with the whole DeFi landscape. So I think that's not where we want to be.
No, I totally agree, and that's an awesome answer. And I guess just moving to Alpha X, described it earlier as just tokenized perpetuals, the funding rate built in, makes a lot of sense from a composability aspect to be able to use those tokens in different projects within DeFi. I guess the obvious question for you is, how do you think about layer twos and, you know, potentially other projects offering, I guess, perpetuals on L2? And I mean, you guys are really unique because you're, you know, composable in DeFi, in my opinion, but I guess, how are you viewing the competition and how are you viewing, you know, your move to a layer two, given it would probably be seriously needed for something like this?
Yeah, there are several trade-offs where we're thinking of, right? Because for Alpha X, the positions are tokenized. And to really make the most use of these tokenized positions, it's, you know, it's the DeFi products on L1 that will make a lot of value for these tokenized positions. You can do more things with, you know, Aave, you can do more things with SushiSwap, and so on and so forth. So I think, you know, as we continue to see more of these DeFi products go on various L2s, let's say Uniswap V3 on Optimism, SushiSwap on a number of L1s and potentially on L2 as well, then, you know, this also determines like which ecosystem is actually the most active and where it would be best to launch Alpha X, right? So I think right now we are internally, you know, debating between L1 versus L2, because if it's on L2, then yes, there would be lower gas fees, but the usage of the tokenized positions may not be as much as launching on L1. So perhaps we might launch on both if we want to optimize for both, and if we think that our users are two different groups. One who want to just trade and enjoy the low fees, and one who want to really optimize for the usage of the tokenized positions.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And do you envision a lot of the users, or the majority of, I guess, the volume flow here to be from, you know, retail users and funds, or do you think the majority will be other DeFi protocols that want to use Alpha X for, you know, a myriad of different use cases?
Yeah, I think it will be actually the whales in DeFi. And then including the retails in DeFi too. I think this is the group that have been pretty much untapped by PerpetualSwap as a whole. And if you pretty much look at who uses PerpetualSwap now, these are, I would say, either sophisticated retail traders or institutional and funds, right, who use on the centralized exchanges. And I think there are a lot of trade-offs between using on centralized exchanges and then, you know, really using on-chain. One being, you know, front-running for sure. The other can be, perhaps these are the trades that that, let's say, the funds may not want, you know, potentially anyone to know about. Maybe it's too large. Maybe there's so many security, you know, questions that come more with trading, let's say, from the funds aspect, a huge amount on chain. So in our opinion, I think we're less targeting on the funds who are trading perpetual swap on centralized exchange already, but we're actually capturing a new target segment who are in DeFi already, who haven't really traded perpetual swap. We have talked to a lot of, I would say, big players in DeFi, and they pretty much, you know, enter in trading world, in financial world through DeFi, right? So I think they are more comfortable in staying this way in DeFi, and perhaps once they know pretty much how to like trade perpetual swap on AlphaX, which they don't even need to know like funding rate payments, they don't need to know rebalancing, and pretty much they can achieve the same results. So I would say this is more of the target users that we're targeting, and this pretty much determines how we build the product too, because this is why we are making the funding rate payment into the quoted price. This is also why we have that positions be tokenized, because we want to optimize for the DeFi users.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I definitely think whales will use this first. I am not a whale, but I'm eager to try it out when it's live. The beta was awesome. And yeah, and I guess the other question I have for you just on the token econ, and if anyone else in the audience has a question, let me know. We'll bring some people on stage while we have Tasha. I guess one other question I have is, so stakers for Alpha kind of backstop your whole system, right? Is there any concern on, you know, maybe AlphaX drives, you know, 90% of the fee generation, but, you know, Alpha stakers have to protect against, you know, some like hooligans and Alpha Homura that are, you know, might be up to no good or something. I guess, is there any concern on having the flip side of this, on the risk side, where you have, you know, one pool of capital that's inherently protecting multiple products?
That's a good question. I think the good thing about how our staking contract is built is that it can be scaled quite fast. So I think when we first launch, we will go with you know, one pool for the whole ecosystem, because I think that's how you make sure you gain for the whole ecosystem and you help the whole ecosystem, right? Because if we limit to staking for, let's say, AlphaX alone and separately staking for Alpha Homura, then now the decisions are on the users end or on the stakers end, deciding where they want to stake. But in this case, you know, it's one pool for the whole ecosystem. So I think we will go out with this first. And then, you know, as time goes on, we will continue to get the feedback from the community. Of course, we have to maintain security for all the products. So it doesn't mean that AlphaX would have, you know, higher security than Alpha Homura. All the Alpha products will go through the same, you know, security measures that we have published. So there are 5 items in that security measures, and multiple audits is one of them. So, you know, every product will go through these 5 measures and before they are launched. So yeah, we will continue to monitor and then see what is best. If, you know, let's say people and community think that this is not the best way, and they also don't want to make the choice, perhaps we can help them make the choice in terms of which product they're using. Then you're staking on that product. Or perhaps if you're not using anything, then you can stake for the whole ecosystem, something like that. So I think it's more of a question when we launch and evaluate from the community feedback.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I guess it makes sense. And especially it just drives that inclusion with staking the token and having access to not only the fees, but features, kind of feature unlocks on all of them. And I guess the other question for you is, like, what's next for Alpha, right? Like, AlphaX's plan, that's coming really soon. What other, you know, projects in Alpha have you released? I know I'm excited for a few, but I'm not sure which one's next.
Yeah, so quite a few coming up. You know, Alpha Tokenomics will be live really soon. And then Alpha Homura V2 will be relaunched. So that includes, you know, more leveraged positions that you can take. You can open new positions on Alpha Homura V2. There are going to be new leveraged pools added to Alpha Homura V2, as well as more lending assets on Alpha Homura V2. So right now you can only lend ETH and stable coins, but once it's relaunched, you can also lend other assets. For instance, Wi-Fi, Aave, Link. So those are just a few examples. And then, you know, that's when we push out AlphaX. So AlphaX would really bring the composability for all Alpha products, in which Alpha Homura users will be able to hedge their positions on AlphaX. So we're going to make sure that the interface on this linkage part is really clear and simple. So it will really, you know, benefit both Alpha Homura and AlphaX. For Alpha Homura users, they would benefit because when you're taking a leverage positions on a particular asset, let's say you're borrowing ETH to your ETH USD key pool, right? In this case, you are exposed partially to a short position. So we, you know, the whole linkage between the two products will calculate for you how much you're actually shorting and what that translates to if you're going too long on ETH. So once you confirm that process, you pretty much do a several buttons, and then it will open the opposite position for you. So you're, you know, roughly market neutral between Alpha Homura and AlphaX products. So that's a benefit for Alpha Homura users. And then for AlphaX, of course, this means that you're getting, I mean, we're getting the initial group of user base from Alpha Homura as we continue to grow and scale AlphaX. So, you know, I would say this is the second family. We have the third family already and not yet, you know, shared with the community yet. I think it's more on depending on the timing as well and the market. But I would just say that the third product is in an area of impermanent loss insurance. So that can be a quick, you know, teaser on the third family.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for that one because one, IL is so hard to track and it's so hard to fix. I mean, Bancor has a pretty nice way where they just mint kind of their token to offset it. And ThorChain has a couple of initiatives planned where they will also do something similar, but that will be really cool to kind of see from your hand. I guess just zooming out, Tasha, what do you view the direction of Alpha long-term, right? Because you guys started as providing, you know, niche DeFi services, but it seems like now you guys are going after, you know, traditional markets that exist, right? Like perpetuals and, you know, lending and things like that. Do you think you'll continue to focus on like niche DeFiers, or do you think that Alpha is getting so big that you may have to just, you know, go out there and compete with the other DeFi protocols that kind of exist in the space?
That's a really good question. And pretty much along the same line as, you know, internally, like what I've been thinking on too. And the way that I think about it is that, you know, when you first start, you need to gain that differentiation, right? Typically, differentiation is easier to gain in a niche area than as opposed to you go out on day one and you compete in lending, right? So as a result, we started from niche area first. But as we go on, there are going to be new niches that we will continue to innovate in. At the same time as growing the product more towards the general area. And I think the general area is pretty much where I would say if the new DeFi users were to come in from traditional finance, from CeFi, they would come into this general area first, let's say lending, AMM trading. So pretty much I would say we are both innovating new areas and gain more niches as our competitive advantage, but also at the same time, really pushing the product to grow into the main area to make sure that we are, you know, capturing the new phase of DeFi users who are coming in. And then as the next step, really long-term, I would say we will apply the same concept to pretty much find a way to adapt what we've built and innovate, not perhaps on traditional finance, as that would be quite a long way from now, but then on the midterm, it would be more on the relationship between CeFi and DeFi, as I think that's the next bridge to expand more DeFi users, right? And then once we innovate in that area, then the next area that is more of the long-term path is innovating in the traditional finance. And I think that is why we also have SCB 10X, which is the venture arm of one of the largest commercial banks in Thailand, as one of the investors and partners. So we can start something, you know, down the line, starting here from Thailand and then eventually work always outwards.
Tasha, if there's any ever any alpha meetups in Thailand, I'm totally down to come meet. Obviously, Gordon's there. It would be a good place for an alpha meetup. And I guess on your point of expanding to other products that may or may not exist, how do you handle that scaling internally, right? Because you not only have an increasing headcount, but then you have like a, you know, technical burden of keeping up with everything. But frankly, you also have a lot of culture clashes, right? Like you have to deal with, you know, people that are Ethereum maxis or Binance Smart Chain maxis or on Bitcoin. Like, how do you navigate all those cultures being that you guys are building cross-chain products?
So internally, in terms of our resources, we do multiple things to scale quickly. One is, of course, you know, always recruiting internally here in Thailand. Second is we are starting to, I would say, decentralize the project a bit more. So that means we're not limited to talent in Thailand only, because that may not scale as fast as we would like. So we are interviewing and recruiting, I would say, more of offshore developers as well. Starting first from I would say, those that we know of. Perhaps maybe they are Thai who are living abroad. Maybe they are, you know, a friend of a friend. I think trust is really important, especially when we onboard developers to code our product, right? So we will slowly, you know, decentralize the project step by step. And then the third thing, of course, is we are working with SCB10X, not only to develop relationship long-term, but they actually, you know, send developers to help us build in the meantime. So right now they have sent 4 developers already to pretty much join Alpha team for a number of time and pretty much really gain the knowledge of DeFi so we can do something more down the line too. So that's on the growing resources. In terms of managing communities and clashing communities as we, you know, go multi-chain, I think it really comes down to I would say, when you talk to the community, you really need to know like which group you're talking to, and making sure that, I would say, being in the middle as much as possible. So typically we don't really be as extreme. If you watch our Twitter, we don't, you know, go extreme in one way or the other to make sure that we are set for the multi-chain that we want to go for, right? And I think the clash is, I would say, normal. I think clash is pretty much signifying the change in the industry. And with every change, there's some clash. So this clash may be a good, you know, good, I would say, symbol for the industry, being that it's innovating, it's moving to even more chains. And then eventually, I would say there would be some middle grounds that the communities will find themselves. I think we just need to make sure we're the middle person who, you know, doesn't act too extreme one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool that you guys could have different communities and different chains launch different alpha products. And basically, it doesn't really matter who wins at the end of the day for alpha stakers, right? Because I guess that's the point of having global fee accrual. And I know it might sound crazy today because you have to keep like a firm hand and everything. And, you know, you're building mission critical tech at 1,000 miles an hour. But, you know, when do you think will be the time when a community member or group can come along and propose a new alpha product and handle the entire implementation start to finish? Like, do you think that might be, like, I'm assuming that's probably a couple of years out, but I guess, how do you think through like that type of community building and that type of, you know, crazy decentralization?
Yeah, good question. And that is, you know, a preview of what's coming up too. So, you know, this coming month, April, we're going to start a lot of new community initiatives, including, you know, getting more ideas from the community. In the beginning, it might be more of, you know, us building, or perhaps the developers in the community building some parts of it. And then down the line, hopefully the whole product can be, you know, built and handled by the community. So what is coming up is we're going to do a number of developers grant to make sure that we work with more community while also getting the new tech being built. These are going to be more of the tools that we use as opposed to a new product. And as we continue to scale, then the scope of the developers grant will grow with the scale of decentralization, right? So it will not just limit it to community tools, but it will go towards you know, some parts of the product and then eventually the whole product. So I think that would be the way that we're thinking of it. But the good thing is, you know, with Alpha Finance Lab as an ecosystem, that means that even the new product, it can just be, let's say, you know, a two teams joining hand to create that product and pretty much operate jointly for that product. So I would say that that agile way of working and the modular way of working for each product will make it better for us to scale. So in the future, there will be, you know, this person heading the Alpha Humora team, this new person heading Alpha X, and then this new person working with the external developers team to head Alpha Y, let's say, which is the product developed by the community.
Now that makes a lot of sense. And do you envision, like, I'm assuming this will probably be the case because Alpha X will launch on Ethereum, but do you envision a world where Alpha's ecosystem has different products on different chains, you know, say, like, forever? Like, I mean, you know, if you guys build something on Binance Smart Chain or Solana or something like that, that, you know, just straight up can't exist on Ethereum. Do you think that that will exist in the future? Or do you think that Alpha will have a copy of every implementation of your, you know, use cases on every chain?
I think that really determines on whether that chain needs it. If the chain needs it and there are a lot of, you know, users and target demand that we want to capture, then we will launch. If not, then it won't go that to that chain because it's not going to be worth the engineering resources to maintain a product. And I would say more products that we launch on multiple chains, that reduces the speed for us to think about new products and incubate more products too.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And I guess, how do you think through just the other benefits of having like an umbrella of projects, right? Like if you guys wanted to use another another layer one that you guys already interact with for scaling, like, you know, I'm probably jumping ahead on a lot of technical hurdles. Nipun would probably shoot me here, but, you know, is there any way to use, you know, Binance Smart Chain for scaling and Alpha X users won't know the difference and you settle on Ethereum? Like what are the like interrelatedness between the L1s that you work with that you could kind of benefit from? Because it seems like you clearly have the relationships and the plugins to kind of do this.
So with the relationship between L1s, it is quite, I would say, limited to token transfer at the moment, while the each of the L1s work on more of the advanced linkage. So advanced linkage would include transferring the messages and really allowing, you know, the product on one chain to interact with another chain. And I think that's a few years out. So yeah, and unfortunately, we're fixed with the token transfer at the moment, but I think we will find a way to work around in the meantime while the scalable solution is being worked on.
That's awesome. And one last question for me, Tasha, and if anyone in the crowd has a question, just raise your hand. But the other question is, you know, you spoke earlier about how you guys make it so big that you have to compete with, you know, traditional DeFi incumbents. I guess the flip side of that is, how do you stay small enough to be able to offer the innovative DeFi products that kind of got you here, right? I'm assuming that's kind of goes hand in hand with the decentralization aspects and letting other people build. But, are you ever concerned, like, you know, you wake up and you're like, damn, I'd love to build that, but I'm just too busy with my bigger products, you know?
Yeah, I have that feeling, and I'm sure Nipun has more of that feeling than I am because he is, I would say, very, you know, full of ideas. Some ideas are, you know, not yet, I would say, of a priority. Some ideas are something of a priority, like Alpha X, that we work together to incubate it, right? I think that this comes as we scale more of the team. So right now it's the developers team for Alpha Finance Lab, right? But going forward, we will have more of a mini unit into, like, under Alpha Finance Lab. Like, let's say this unit works on Alpha Humora, this unit works on Alpha X, this unit works on incubating new products. And then once it's incubated, then it's transferred to the new unit. So once we achieve that stage of having a more like modular teams to run each product, then I think that will be when we can really tackle, you know, a lot of ideas and not hold back by the resources.
That's awesome, Tasha. Well, I'm super excited for staking and Alpha X and the new products you're launching and just to continue to see Alpha grow. full disclosure for everyone that joined late, we're ecstatic investors in Alpha through Delphi Ventures. And just another disclosure, this was being recorded. It'll air on our podcast channel. And Tasha, I know you're swamped. I really appreciate you coming on for a second time. And frankly, I'm really eager to have you on again, hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. And your questions are really great. Actually have, provoked me to think of, a number of things, and those things are actually like become action items. So thanks for that.
Yeah, of course, Tasha. I appreciate that. Well, it's been awesome having you on. We'll let you go back, get back to building. And thanks again.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.